Welcome to the New Hampshire Exit Podcast for February 27th, 2022, also known as the New Hampshire Independence Town Hall Meeting, although usually it's more the size of a podcast. Can everybody hear me?
I hear you. Good afternoon.
Hey. I'm joined by I'm Dave Reilly from ReillyReport.com or NHExit.com, depending on how you define it. And I'm joined by Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live. I was joined by someone else a minute ago, but they dropped off for a sec. Maybe I'll be back. Do you have any NHExit news you'd like to share with us, Ian?
I don't have anything specific to NHExit at this time. We're waiting still for the State House to actually have the full House hearing on CACR 32, the bill to allow the people to vote on a constitutional amendment to secede peacefully. So we're still waiting on that. But I did hear in relation to that, that the State House will finally be returning to the actual State House, I believe, on their March 10th session. So it would be nice if that happens to coincide with the hearing of CACR 32, because the Democrats, who are probably more likely to be against this than the Republicans, although there's plenty of Republicans who are against it, are deathly afraid of, or at least they act like they're afraid of COVID. And so there are, I saw at least one Democrat commenting that, oh my God, it's going to be so dangerous, you know, that sort of thing, because in the State House, there's 400 seats and they're all right next to one another. So for the last 2 years, the state reps have been meeting in like soccer stadiums and, you know, football stadiums and huge convention halls and things like that to get the 6 feet between all 400 reps. And now they're going to be back in, packed in, quote unquote, like sardines, as I believe the Democrat House leader said. So that may actually result in some of them refusing to attend. I don't know. It'll be interesting. Either way, it'll be a smaller back to a smaller venue. And of course, we're all familiar with the House grounds because, you know, the activists here have spent plenty of time there. So it'd be nice if it went back to the House for the CACR 32 hearing, so we can, you know, cover the entrances and hand out flyers or whatever we're going to do. But as of now, we don't have a date. We still don't know when that's going to happen. But presumably, when it happens, it will be back at the State House.
We will talk probably at some point in the call about the recent events. It almost feels like we're in the middle of or at the beginning of World War III right now. But I wanted to ask fellow Jitzer first, if you have any NHExit news or thoughts.
Oh, are you speaking to me?
Yeah, he calls you fellow Jitzer. You can call yourself whatever you want.
No, that's good. That's fine. I just, listened just a little bit to what was just said, and I mean, I guess my only comment on that is that it's not surprising, given the politicalization of COVID and everything, that even though science may come out to say that, well, maybe it's not as frightening, to save face possibly in the political realm, I can see why maybe they still want to hold to the certain regulations that, you know, like these were our regulations, they were correct, when maybe they are having a hard time accepting that they perhaps were wrong or blew the COVID thing a little bit out of proportion compared to what it seemed to be.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I guess the prime sponsor of this independence legislation, Mike Sylvia, people were losing their minds because he said, I guess he called it first before anyone else. I think in January, he said that the COVID pandemic is over. And people were freaking out in the media because he said that. But so far, it appears that he was correct.
Well, there was actually a memo that leaked out this week, went on social media. It was from a public relations firm that I guess some of the Democrats had hired to advise them. And it basically said, it's a 2-page memo. It basically said, okay, Democrats, people are getting sick of all this stuff. So we need to go ahead and just take the win, you know, act like we won and we, you know, have given people the tools to handle COVID. And it's all thanks to the Democrats, and back down on restrictions. Cause if you start talking about more restrictions, you're going to lose votes this November. And so, yeah, even the Democrats are being advised to, you know, call this thing a day and quote unquote, take the win. I mean, I'm being asked if that's New Hampshire Democrats. And I believe this is at the national level that the Democrats are being advised of that. Because, you know, they know there's an election coming up and they know people are getting tired of this shit. So they're going to start changing their tune.
Welcomes to Chris Wade and background, Bonnie. Do either of you have any in New Hampshire independence related news or thoughts?
Mostly here just to listen.
There is going to be the New Hampshire Liberty Forum coming up this coming weekend, and it is a sold-out event, and one of the things they're going to be having is on Sunday, I believe, there's going to be a secession panel. I believe Carla Garrick will be heading that up, and as I understand it, Alu Axelman is expected to be speaking on that panel. There may be people in attendance as well from other secession movements, such as California and Texas. But I have not heard confirmation of those attendees.
Yeah, I thought I heard that Texas, some folks were sending somebody, but I don't know for sure. Of course, Marcus Evans, the leader of CalExit, has been a guest on this podcast a time or two. And we have an open invitation to him whenever he wants to drop by. I don't send him an invitation every week, but I probably should send more invitations.
I do intend to do a video of that event. So even though it's a sold out thing, I will get the video. And so therefore everyone should be able to see whatever magic happens.
You know, if you have to choose, I would say just throw a microphone up in front of just put a microphone on the table. I mean, these videos that people shoot, where the microphone is 20 feet away from the speaking, it's not even, I don't think anyone even watches those. But I don't know, maybe you already do that.
No, I usually don't. I do have a little recording device. I mean, some people watch. I don't have a very big channel, though, so. You get what you get.
With speeches, it's the audio that counts. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've downloaded a speech only to wish I hadn't done so because the person put the camera 20 feet away from the audio. Sometimes, you know, I guess sometimes if you have a camera right next to the electronic speaker, you know, not the speaker as in the person, but the speaker as in the box speaker. Sometimes that works. But that ultimately the audio just has to be, the microphone has to be so close to the audio in an auditorium in order for it to work as a as something that you can like listen to while you're eating or whatnot. Other thing, I have posted a link. I posted a statement on behalf of nhexit.com, which is sort of just me, in relation to the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine the other day. There was some thinking that maybe I shouldn't issue any kind of statement at all. There some folks did indicate that in the Telegram, and I saw that chatter after I issued the statement. But I guess after they read the statement, they kind of liked it. So like, apparently it's not that controversial, but it is a little bit complicated. What I'll do, I guess I will probably read the statement like after everybody's gone. I'm not going to make you all sit here and sit. I'm not going to make you all sit through it. But one of the things to keep in mind is that you have to get World War II type situations or World War I type situations, which this seems to be right now. That tends to undermine independence movements, and we need to be mindful of that.
I've been wondering, how do you think that this affects independent to counties or whatever in Ukraine declared independence supposedly, and then Putin recognized them as independent? Do you think that that's a positive or a negative?
My understanding is that World War II undermined the Jefferson State independence movement, which is apparently pretty strong in the 30s. That's just one precedent, but there are others. I guess I'll list the others if no one has anything to add or mention the others. So I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I was just going to say, man, I'm just going here. If this is an unpopular war with New Hampshireites, that may actually bolster our secession movement. You know, if people want to stay out of the war and then the U.S. government wants to get into it, I don't know.
Well, so far
in the war, so you know, a lot of people are buying the Western propaganda in this case, as usual, even after they just lied to on COVID. They're believing the war propaganda.
How about Afghanistan or Iraq?
Yeah, those wars fit in well with the independence narrative, but this one doesn't. This one's more like Poland 1939. And so far, the United States has actually sort of stayed out of it. They're going to be shipping weapons and so forth, but they haven't sent any tanks in, they haven't sent any planes in, they haven't said they're going to. If they continue that policy, that is not the worst policy.
Well, a lot of it seems to be political speak, at least from Biden saying that he wasn't going to send troops to Ukraine, reassuring, but just saying that we're going to strengthen our NATO allies. But that seems to be what Putin is pointing the finger at, is NATO. And I agree with Ian as far as us being surrounded by, I guess, what you would call blue states, that if a blue president were to, you know, want to show aggression, that would potentially be beneficial for, you know, New Hampshire pulling out of the Union and, you know, making a declaration of peace. How that would be accepted by everyone else, I mean, who really knows?
So it's been done before. This is not New Hampshire's first rodeo with independence, because they tried it in, I guess, 1815. They were right on the verge of concrete independence action when the War of 1812 came to an end. And their perceived parlay with England back then, the United States was in war with England. The New Hampshire's perceived parlay with England was used successfully against the Federalist Party. The Federalist Party was pretty dominant in New England, and it destroyed the Federalist Party. The fact that they had gotten, it was felt that they had engaged in separate negotiations or starting to engage in separate negotiations or a separate peace with England, that did not end well for the party that tried to do that.
Well, would it be possible, I mean, for New Hampshire, if, you know, secession were to be, you know, next steps, declaring or, you know, advocating peace on both points and maybe being a location where people could actually go and do a peace treaty, like a Camp David that's, you know, outside the U.S., but still fit for the same purpose of rival nations or disagreeing nations meeting in a certain place and saying, all right, this is kind of peaceful ground, it's neutral, this would be a spot to go, possibly.
That's been done, too, in New Hampshire with some success. The Treaty of Portsmouth was, of course, signed in New Hampshire in 1905 between Russia and Japan. So that's an interesting idea. I'm convinced there's 1,000 things New Hampshire could do that would be better for Ukraine than just being part of this crappy NATO alliance, or at least the crappy U.S. United States government system.
Well, if the Ukraine president's serious about international legion, welcoming foreigners to come join, I mean, possibly for, you know, peacekeeping. I mean, it's hard to say with peacekeeping because peacekeeping usually is usually done with a gun.
Yeah, the problem is it's complicated, right? The simple, like Iraq or Afghanistan war, that triggers sort of a simple, oh, just, you know, leave the United States. That's how we help deal with the Iraq war and stuff like that. Simple. But yeah, when you get a World War II type situation like this is, or it's maybe a little closer to World War I, then in a case like that, it's harder to easily fit independence into the new paradigm. And that, you know, that may be one reason why that new paradigm is happening.
I've got a question for you guys. What's the story with the independence stuff going on? Like, is there a vote? Like,
yeah, Ian addressed that earlier. I think they haven't set a date yet, but there is a House event coming up shortly, a House General Session, and it's probably going to be in the real State House.
Okay. That's the thing I'm really waiting on, so, or I don't know, waiting on, but just interested in.
Right.
I mean, not that it doesn't go anywhere necessarily, but, you know, it's a progress of progress. We got to vote.
Well, it looks like we got one, you know, but again, we haven't had one yet. And cool. I'm sure there's a motivation over there in Concord to kind of make sure there isn't one. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that would like to see there not be a vote, but, I think, you know, it looks like they're going to be, you know, it looks like it's going to happen anyway.
Let's hope so.
Wouldn't it be confusing for like Vermont and Massachusetts, or, you know, the states that surround New Hampshire, if obviously in the climate of this war or whatever this is, if people in New Hampshire took a step for peace and saying that, yeah, actually we want to branch away or do our own thing outside of the U.S. because we don't want to get involved in this war, when it seems to be presently in the past couple of years, all that they say is the problem with New Hampshire is white nationalism. White nationalism is the problem. But if people pull out and say, actually, you know, the war is the problem, it seems like it would almost flip it on its head for the people around us.
I'm still trying to figure out where the white nationalism's coming from. I mean, or where the white nationalism is that they're supposedly claiming exists.
Well, I think, you know, I went to college kind of during the whole 9/11 thing, and it was definitely part of the brand of, you know, of targeted towards me at the time. And I think a lot of us that, you know, you want to serve your country, you want to be, you know, step up and defend, and, you know, military commercials during the NFL and stuff. And now it's, you know, whether or not it is a thing or it's not a thing, it's definitely something that they're grabbing on as the scapegoat, as to, well, this must be the problem with what's going on in the U.S., not military expansion or aggression or anything.
In New Hampshire, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm afraid that neo-Nazi behavior is a much bigger problem in Ukraine than it is in New Hampshire with, I guess, what is it, 25% of the, I heard it was 25% of the Ukrainian parliament has neo-Nazi leanings. And, you know, I mean, if that's what the people voted in, then that's what they get. Ukrainians have an anti-Russian, some degree of anti-Russian streak because of what Russians have done to them under the Soviet Union so many times. And now Russians are doing, well, the Russian government is doing it by itself without the Soviet Union. So you can see why there'd be some hostility. But again, the United, if white nationalism is a problem, then I guess all these people, none of them would be supporting Ukraine.
Well, I lived in Kazakhstan for a while, and I interacted with, you know, Russians and Ukrainians there. And from what I recall, it's kind of like Washington State, where you've got to kind of draw down the middle. And Eastern Ukraine is more pro-Russia, more suspicious of the West. And I guess the Western Ukrainian, because of the culture and the interaction of the people, it seemed that they all had general mistrust, wariness of Westerners, given the Cold War, perhaps, or maybe what's happened since then.
We go over по-русски, да?
Да, чуть-чуть.
Хорошо.
Is this a Russian?
Yeah, I don't speak. I don't speak any Ukrainian. Yeah, but that's Russian. So Ditzer speaks Russian because he lived in Kazakhstan.
Is New Hampshire independence one big Russian plot to I don't know, the United States?
Yeah, didn't you get your check from the Kremlin?
No, I want to know where it is.
So let's see. Oh, okay. Why am I talking? I didn't have anything to say. I was just going to ask everyone else if they had anything else to add. So one thought, you know, like there was this organization, you know, sometimes people think that peace is just impossible. And then somebody comes up with this outside the box solution, right? It doesn't happen very often, but there was a situation, you know, in Peru and Ecuador where, you know, in 1940, Peru invaded Ecuador while everyone else was distracted by the World War II. And they succeeded. They got like half of Ecuador's territory or whatnot. And then there was a renewed fighting in the 90s over this. And so some outside organization came in with no dog in the fight and arranged, like they brokered a peace where these contested territories were turned into national parks. And the fighting just stopped and the issue just went away. So Ditzer's idea of, you know, using New Hampshire as more of a place where people could meet and work out some kind of outside the box peace agreement. That would be cool if something like that could happen.
Like turn all of New Hampshire into a national park, but the national park wasn't operated by the United States, but an independent entity.
Well, I mean, it could be a place where people could come to negotiate. That would be better than New Hampshire just being part of the crappy US system.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you're trying to clone something more like Switzerland, maybe, then.
Then the problem is?
Well, oh, I don't know. There is one.
Porkfest would be a great place to sign the peace treaty.
I feel like it wouldn't be the first time that something like that's happened at Porkfest.
Yeah, the first Shire Society Declaration was signed at Porkfest, for what that's worth.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Well, I'm sure I'm missing something here. I usually have some piece of news that I forget to deliver, but I think I took some notes last time and came up with, they had more things to mention. I'm going to check and see what I've got here. I still need to talk among yourselves.
Well, if secession were to move forward, I guess what is everyone's ideas about certain regions? Where I imagine would have to develop the coast would have to develop somewhat. And I actually work for a town in New Hampshire. I won't name the one, but the crumbling infrastructure and the way people are just basically putting duct tape over walls, I would think that they would welcome an opportunity to get resources to repair the infrastructure at the very least.
How would that relate to independence?
Well, if we're allowed to, you know, do our own trade deals, manage our resources under our control and not outsource them or do whatever the U.S. does, then, you know, we will be able to keep more of those resources in-house and then use those to I would think either repair what they have or build new. It would be ultimately what the people wanted.
Doesn't New Hampshire already do that to some degree? I think the New Hampshire already refuses some, at least some federal funds for roads and things. And if you compare it to Massachusetts, the roads in New Hampshire are way better.
Yeah, I mean, the roads especially, but just it seems that the New Hampshire, outside of maybe the larger cities, is kind of holding on to 150, 200 years ago out of some historic nostalgia. And that might be one of the biggest things to overcome, because people want to hark back to, you know, 1820 and horseback rides and things like that, when moving forward with into the type of new nation is going to create a new history. So that stuff would theoretically either be recategorized as something else or given less the emotional investment.
I found the news. Okay. Yeah, I should have reported this last week, actually. But apparently, and Ian can tell us more about this, but Ian and some other activists have now fully reimbursed New Hampshire taxpayers for the expense of hearing the New Hampshire Independence Amendment. So it's thought to be about a $2,000 expense. And thank you, Ian, and all others who have, they've handed out tiny pieces of gold to various New Hampshireites. I would tell us more, Ian, if you wish. So Ian may be AFK.
Still not sure where that number came from, but that was the number that Dave gave us. So we went ahead with it and gave out hundreds of pieces of gold to primarily to the people that showed up and bothered to come to the hearing at the State House earlier this year. People were receiving roughly $20 worth of gold backs. So we gave out what were called five denominations, so fives gold backs, to which retail for about $20. Probably got about $10 worth of gold in them, but they go for usually about twice the gold price because they're valuable and useful. And then proceeded to give away the rest of the $2,000 worth in singles. So 1/1,000th of an ounce of gold. So the fives are 5/1,000th of an ounce. The singles are 1/1,000th of an ounce. And that was done at the Free State Project's Porcupine Day event a couple weeks ago. And then there was also the Libertarian Party convention. So those are the people. So basically the funds went to the best activists that are out and about.
So yeah, the this may be the first time in New Hampshire history that people who wanted a bill to be heard have actually reimbursed taxpayers for the alleged cost of hearing it. That number, by the way, comes from Chaz Prohl. At least he got it somewhere else. I think he probably got it from a media outlet back in the day. But this was Chaz Prohl has been a guest on this podcast. And so he's an opponent of New Hampshire exit. But I consider him a friend. And he's been here to deliver a speech against it where we gave him the floor. But yeah, he actually called me out in 2006, I think, because I had requested a couple of bills, and he called me out, not necessarily by name, but just called us out for this additional taxpayer expense of hearing these bills that didn't pass. And I decided that he was correct to call us out and never again requested a bill unless I could get some indication that the taxpayers would not have to foot the bill, or at least they'd be reimbursed for it in some way. That never happened until this legislation.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's just a way of getting people not to, or certain with certain philosophical beliefs, to not push forward as far as, you know, legislation is concerned. I don't know. I get the objection, but you're the only thing you're doing is hurting yourself.
Yeah, personally, I don't know if I buy the claims, but it was something that was important to Dave, so we went ahead and did it. I mean, it doesn't hurt to give out gold to people, so you know, we did that. But I tend to believe that they have whatever budget they have, and then you know they hear all the bills that need to be heard. So I don't think the budget goes. I don't think there's any evidence the budget goes up or down based on whether or not there's 850 bills or 825 bills or you know 900 bills. I don't think that matters. All those bureaucrats are getting paid a salary.
I don't even think it matters, even if it did go up, honestly. I mean, I don't want to see it go up, but, you know, to say that we can't have our bills heard when the opposition is going to have their bills heard, I mean, I don't know. It's, yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Mr. Penguin. The Democrats are definitely not going to hold back, and the statist Republicans are not going to hold back for concern over budgetary matters, but... Again, we're just talking about that. You know, supposedly, the number takes into effect the amount of money it costs to have people at the state house or whatever, and it's like those people are getting paid a salary, so yeah. You know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, this is. I feel, you know, it's interesting. Like, I feel the same way about like money, and not that I like. It's kind of interesting because I would object to money being taken by New Hampshire from the U.S. federal government, but that's for other reasons. But you know, if the government's taking money from you and you're going to get some of it back, refusing to take or accept some of that money back, you know, I don't know. Like, it's always one of these things where it's like, I don't think people should necessarily refuse. I mean, maybe if there's strings attached to it or something like that, there'd be good reason to refuse. But otherwise, you're effectively just hurting your own interests. And benefiting those who you know your philosophical enemy, so to speak. So
I ran for rep in 2008, and the solution I came up with was that I would not sponsor any legislation, but I would try to find someone on the other side of the aisle. Or just some, you know, like the most authoritarian person I could find, like figure out a way to make friends with Emma Rouse or something like that. That's actually not possible. But that was the idea, you know, walk up to her and say, I tell you what, if you don't sponsor any legislation this year, I won't sponsor any legislation this year, and make a non-aggression pact of sorts. That was my thought as to how that would be handled. Because again, by that time I was already in this mode where I did not want to sponsor any legislation. But of course, I never had that problem because I never got elected.
Yeah, I don't think you'd make a good state rep.
I don't think you'd get anywhere with it either. Anyway, but I kind of like the idea. I think, but it's. I think the idea is effectively, if everybody does that, then we wouldn't have any more government. But
also, you know, only one side is going to be in control of the state house. So asking an authority, like if the authoritarians aren't running the place, then asking the authoritarians to not sponsor bills in return for you not sponsoring bills just means you won't get anything done, whereas otherwise you would. They wouldn't get anything done anyway because they can sponsor all the shitty bills they want to, and they're all going to go down in flames if they're in the minority. So, you know, whether or not we like it, and I think most of the people here don't care for the political process. It does exist, and it's better to have our people there doing things than not, even though I tend to disagree with a lot of the things they do. Like, they're not principled enough for me. I'm not a big fan of this cannabis thing that some of them are cheering on, which is going to create a new bureaucracy under the Liquor Commission, all new cannabis stores run by the government, empowering the Liquor Commission even further. You know, all of them, they're cheering it on because they claim it means that we won't be taxing cannabis. But it were also then, if that would also then create a completely new bureaucracy and make it that much more difficult to take this out of the state's hands eventually. So it's a huge mistake. And, yeah, politics is an ugly thing.
Yeah, I'm against that too. You know, philosophically, but I can't help but put a smile on my face when I think narco state, like a literal, like not even like a traditional concept of a narco state, but the government literally becoming the, you know, the drug dealer.
Yeah, but it already was. It already is the drug dealer of the hardest drug, which is alcohol, liquor.
Yeah. No. Like I said, I'm not for it. It still puts a smile on my face that the government is doing the thing that they've been fighting all these years. They're now becoming.
All right. Well, if anyone else has anything to add, then go ahead if you wish. Once the call's done, I guess I'll go ahead and read the Russia-Ukraine statement into the record on behalf of NHExit.com. All right. I guess I'll go ahead and start reading. Feel free to interrupt me if you want, and you know, feel free to leave too. Like I said, I don't expect anyone to sit all the way through this, but I'll go ahead and read it for the podcast. Thanks everyone for being here. Quote, NHExit.com statement on Kremlin invasion of Ukraine. February 25th, 2022. One. The Russian government's act of all-out conventional war is wildly excessive. Any individual or voluntarily funded institution wishing to help defend Ukraine against this overstep is far within their rights, recent Kremlin threats against this notwithstanding. Two, the initial success of the attack on this Western-leaning nation is a reminder that Washington cannot be relied on to defend New Hampshire. Counterintuitive as it sounds, NH would be better off and the Western world should benefit if we handled our own defense and diplomacy instead of being tied to the weirdly aggressive yet impotent DC zombie. We would find a wider range of better options for our security. These range from the happily demilitarized neutrality of Costa Rica to the gun-heavy but non-aligned preparedness of Switzerland. We would also have the option of doing something better for future nations under threat, like Ukraine. We could insist that any government we ally ourselves with free its own people from invasion-enabling gun control laws. Three, Ukraine's government has made this invasion practical by doing something most European governments and even American governments are still doing. They limited the private possession carry of firearms up until the week of the invasion, when they finally let civilians carry them without permission. This is roughly what happened in the ill-fated Spanish Republic during the 1936 war. Ukrainians are now reported to be desperately mobbing gun stores for good reason, but probably too late. Gunpolicy.org lists Ukraine as having only 7 civilian firearms per 100 persons, a foreign invader's dream. Civilians in the average U.S. state, including New Hampshire, reportedly possess over 115 per 100. Four, Washington has unnecessarily provoked Moscow over the last 30 years. By moving NATO so close to Russian borders and arguably sponsoring a Ukrainian coup in 2014, it ignored the Rodina's security concerns. Since 2001 especially, it has bombed, blockaded, and invaded many nations with little good reason but much abuse of local civilians. It has cast away the relative ethical high ground against the wishes of most New Hampshireites. It has also become a direct physical threat to all of us with its unconstitutional rules and raids inside our libertarian-leaning state. It has become incapable of credibly condemning Russia's actions the way it did during the Kremlin's invasion of Finland in 1939. 5. U.S. ruler Joe Biden's statement of February 24th, 2022 is partially worthy of condemnation. Quote, Putin chose this war, and now he and his country will bear the consequences, unquote. By speaking in this manner, he equated the Russian people with their quasi-dictator. That would be like equating General Franco with the Catalan anarchists he so victimized in the Spanish Civil War. Individual Russians and the Russian nation should be treated as potential allies against Putin. Many have already risked their lives this week to protest against him. 6. New Hampshire, unlike Switzerland and Costa Rica, is currently on the nuclear target list as a result of its membership in the United States system. This would be one thing if the U.S. were generally in the right and generally humane. It is not, and thus is not worthy of our lives. Both D.C. and Moscow deserve opposition. Neither deserve support. 7. Moscow's move may be designed to divert attention from a planned attack on Taiwan, where invasion-friendly gun laws are even more severe than Ukraine's. 8. The appropriate New Hampshire move is to peaceably declare independence from the U.S., as Rep. Sylvia's current legislation at Concord is attempting to do. Then it should set a clean foreign policy of its own crafting. This policy should be one that does not overextend and does not aggress, but does keep faith with foreign allies by insisting, as a minimum condition of continued partnership, that their governments end all the gun controls they are imposing on their people. Dave Ridley, nhexit.com, independence without enmity, unquote. End of statement. I wanted to write a short statement, but didn't have time, so I wrote a long one. All right, that should be the end of the podcast for now. You can find these podcasts at ridleyreport.com, sometimes with a bit of a delay. And we will see you next week.